Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 329 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Kirk Tarman. Kirk is a criminal defense attorney in Southern California. And we have a great conversation, he and I think, owing to the fact that when I first started practicing law, I shared office with four other attorneys, all of whom were criminal defense attorneys. And this was after I did all of my intern work in the prosecutor's office. So at first I thought I was going to put bad guys in jail. And then later I shared office space with people trying to keep them out of jail. So I have something of a perspective of what it takes to run a criminal defense practice. And so Kirk and I talk about his journey. He spent the better part of nearly 25 years being a criminal defense attorney and a solo practitioner, occasionally with some staff members, but currently a true solo with some support staff. And we cover all the bases and the unique aspects of what it means to be a criminal defense attorney. And so I hope you find some value in this and you enjoy the conversation. And so without any further delay, here is Kirk Tarman. Kirk Tarman, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, Neil, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kirk. It's really a pleasure to have you with us today. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I'm a solo practitioner in Rancho Cucamonga doing basically criminal defense. And when I say solo, I mean I'm running my own business. I basically have a staff working for me. Usually I have associate attorneys working for me. Right now there's a desert out there for associate attorneys, so it's just me. And I can speak to that a little bit later, how that's affecting me and what's going on.
Great. How long have you been doing criminal defense?
Let's see. It's been 23 years, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 23 years or so.
So quite a long time. You know, when I when I first came out of law school and, you know, I went to law school late in life, I thought I was going to work in the criminal law arena, either as a prosecutor or defense attorney, because figure there's no shortage of clients or cases.
There's never a shortage of clients. It's a matter of clients that can pay.
Well, there you go.
The real factor. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. And as it turned out, I did all my intern work in the prosecutor's office. And then when the time came to pull the trigger, I went a different direction. So what do you know? Right.
Well, I did the same.
Yeah. Did you always think you were going to do criminal defense, or did you start out in a different area of law and migrate to criminal defense?
Well, criminal defense is so palatable in the sense, like, you've seen it on TV, you know, and as I grew up, you watch the sure. movies and stuff. So I understood the concept of it. And so it was an easy transition in the sense that I understood what it meant. Rather than, like, for example, personal injury law. You don't see a lot of movies on that, a lot of TV shows on that. However, a lot of money be had in those other fields. Sure. But criminal defense has got that uniqueness. It's more interesting. I think the fact patterns themselves, the clients are more interesting. It's a lot of trial work, a lot of work in the courthouse, in the courtroom, rather than a lot of paperwork.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the office when I shared an office with other attorneys. Three of the other four attorneys were criminal defense attorneys. So
right.
I got that experience quite vividly. And, you know, I think this is an understated aspect of the law. People don't realize as much is that every story is different.
For sure.
You know, like I do estate planning now. Every family has a different story. I used to do family law. Every family law, a different story. And the same is true in criminal defense or prosecuting, you know, the cases on the other side. You know, all the fact patterns are different. All the circumstances are different. All the individuals and the rationale and the backstories are different. And that's what keeps it interesting.
And it's also a real important factor that you got to bring to light because too many times, like a prosecutor will be, oh, it's another DUI, it's another domestic violence. They put it into the box and they don't understand the context. And I think that that's super important to show them the differences. Why should we take a chance with this person? Why should we take a chance and give this guy a break? So you got to put that context into play and show them the uniqueness of this person, of your client, so you can get a different result than other people.
You know, and it's not just a yes or no, guilty or not guilty.
For sure.
Discussion, because the best criminal defense attorneys I've seen are the ones that elocute on behalf of their client for a more favorable sentence.
Well, right.
And, I mean, and that's right. As important, if sometimes if more important. Well, I guess it's not more important than favorable outcome in terms of guilt, but it's not something that you can just wash over.
No. Well, 95% of our cases resolve through a plea bargain, through a negotiation with the district attorney. Only about 5% go to jury trial, you know, and those are the ones that I think I can win, you know, and I'm going to tell you, that's kind of rare. Most of the time, you know, someone's been arrested, something went down, something wrong happened. My client did something that's usually bad. There are some categories of cases where my clients are truly not guilty, completely innocent. But those are pretty rare, sometimes like the rape by intoxication, those kind of things are they truly are innocent. They don't know what's going on. They don't know that the victim feels that they're too intoxicated to give consent. So those are a category of crimes where they're actually innocent. Well, most of the time, there's somebody who's done something wrong, you know, either driving with a little bit of alcohol or just grabbed their spouse. You know, something went wrong. That brought the cops into play and the prosecution got into it. So, yeah, it's about showing the DA that this is a unique situation. There's unique stressors involved. There's context here.
Right. And sometimes that context or describing it takes on more of the almost psychological or that's not the right word.
Well, yeah, no, psychological, the emotional, the equitable part, the part of the humanity. The non-binary aspect of life, that's not a zero or one. Life is gray. It's hard. It's complicated. There's stressors. There's nuances. There's things going on that make people make stupid decisions. It doesn't mean they're bad people. So I can't
tell you how many times my office mates would say, you know, unfortunately, this guy or this gal, unfortunately, they're as guilty as can be.
Yeah.
But they're really good people. It's just a bad day or it was just a bad time. And the first time I heard that, I went like, yeah, sure. that's what you tell yourself in order to look yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
But the more I saw that and the more I kind of kept my ear open to that possibility, the more I found it to be true. In a lot of cases. Now, not every case. You know, sometimes a bad guy is really a bad guy.
Yep.
You know, but they deserve representation just like the next one.
Yeah. I think there are people who live a very insulated existence and they only see that, oh, well, then they shouldn't have done that. But people who have lived life a little bit or have family members who have lived life or children that have lived life or an uncle and sometimes these people are rough around the edges and they've done some stuff and prosecutors who have lived a full existence can go, okay, I understand there's context here. Now, some of these people who live, you know, in the white picket fences and they haven't gone outside and they haven't themselves had a rough around the edges existence or had, you know, people in proximity have rough around the edges, you know, experiences. They don't get it. They're just all wild and they shouldn't have done what they've done. But most like wiser, more experienced individuals recognize that life is complicated. And sometimes these bad decisions have a thread that you can pull and explain it and give the district attorney a little explanation. Like I've got clients, like their spouses recently died, or I've got some, the two of their family members were murdered like recently. And yes, they went on a bender and then they did drive. And I get it. Yeah. But again, that's not what they've done consistently. It's and they're remorseful, but they have a reason why this very isolated incident did occur. And I think that should make a difference when people are punished.
When I was contemplating practicing in the criminal defense or criminal prosecution area, I remember a lot of my peers, like my non-law school peers, would say, how can you do that? I mean, aren't you just
making it possible? All the time.
Yeah, you hear it all the time. Aren't you making it possible for bad guys to perpetuate, you know, bad behavior? And how do you look yourself in the mirror? And ironically, these are the same people who have that viewpoint until something happens to them or a loved one, and then they want the very best criminal defense attorney they can find.
Absolutely. I mean, I've heard that my entire life, from my buddies to just people like me. It's like, oh, you represent scumbags. And it's just like, hey, look, the truth is sometimes, I do. But I mean, the system does not work at all without a defense attorney. It just doesn't happen. If somebody didn't represent individuals, guilty or innocent or somewhere in between, the system completely breaks down. And the truth of the matter is the adversarial relationship between the prosecution and the defense, I think once that is engaged, somewhere in the middle is the truth of what happened, you know, and that's why it works. And there are times where it's a difficult process. I got to admit, there are times where I'm like, oh, God, you know, this is one that I feel that we've got some issues with it. I feel I've got problems with my client. And it's a little bit more difficult to engage, I guess, zealously, but yet, you know, I know it's my job. Someone pays me to do it. I've got to be the gunslinger. I've got, you know, I've got to draw down. I've got to do my best no matter what. But again, you know, there are a lot of cases where it's a lot more, it's more difficult. Yeah. However, most of my cases are what I would call victimless. Either it's, you know, the in like domestic violence situations, 99% of them have what are called recanting victims, which is the spouse or the victim in the case is basically saying, no, there's a little bit more going on here. I may have initiated the violence, or there's something important that needs to be said. I don't really want this person to be prosecuted. We've got people who are like doctors and nurses who are losing their jobs because of one bad mistake, you know? So again, it's all, there's a lot of variables involved with, you know, evaluating these things and getting good results.
Certainly. How'd you get started in criminal defense work?
Well, I was working with a guy up in Victorville, which is here. Good guy. He was running his own law firm, and he was doing a general practitioner, you know, which is he did everything. And I was earning, I think, like $3,000 a month. And eventually, the office was run very chaotically. I was running around from one place to another. And eventually I realized that $3,000 a month, all I had to do was get one DUI case. And I was making that $3,000 a month. And I remember doing my evaluation. My overhead at the time was like $1,100 from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. Car payment, groceries, rent, you know, those are the good old days. And so I was like, if I get one DUI a month, I can make my nut. I can cover all my expenses and I don't have to be running around for this guy. And I can run the office the way I want to run the office, a little bit more efficiently, a little bit more streamlined, and making sure that all my clients are taken care of a little bit better. Not saying that they weren't taken care of, but it was, you know, there was a lot of chaos back in those days.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of a typical view of a lot of criminal defense shops, particularly the smaller ones where they're lurching from one case to another. And, you know, the typical Columbo kind of thing is the attorney who's got notes in his pocket and
trying to remember
which client is which. And while it's a lovable, you know, TV character, it's not one you want to work for or with.
It's not viable for the long term. There's just too much chaos. You have to be organized. You have to have it all kind of at your fingertips.
Yeah, and look, if you don't and you jeopardize somebody's liberty because you're not managing the office and your cases properly, you're going to be in big trouble.
Not only in big trouble, but I mean, you kind of nailed the stress part of this job. You know, people are really relying upon me, not just like to build a wall appropriately or make the faucet work. It's like their liberties. And that's a big stressor. It's hard for me to rationalize maybe I should just chill out and just kind of screw off today when I know that these people really need me to be, you know, focused on their cases. They need the diligence, you know, evaluation. They need the attorney to spend the time on it. That's the stress, is these people really are relying upon you. Not only that, you, and if you screw it up, you get in a lot of trouble as well.
Yeah, and I think it's a unique kind of stress. I mean, I know all of us in the legal profession, we have stressors. You know, our cases provide stress in different ways. I stress that, you know, my clients, if I haven't done their estate plan properly, their family doesn't get what they wanted it to get.
Yes.
All right, that's one level of stress. When I was doing family law, you know, you want a good outcome for your client. At the end of the day, however, most people get through their divorce, get through their custody case, they move on, they adjust, life goes on. I think in criminal work, it's different, because if you are facing potentially, in some cases, loss of liberties, and those aren't typically recoverable. And I think it presents a unique kind of stress. So how do you handle stress in that type of environment?
I drink a lot of alcohol.
Yeah. No, I love the honesty.
No. Look, the only way to really deal with the stress, the true way, is to prepare and really work hard, and knowing at the end of the day, no matter what happens, that you've done a really good job and you've done everything that could be done, which is a very difficult status to get to. Everything that can be done has been done. That's difficult to say at the end of the day. But that's truly the only way you can relieve the stress, knowing that the time has been put in, the research has been done, the communication has been accomplished, and then you kind of have to just deal with whatever the result that you've built occurs. And that's the best way to deal with
it. I totally agree with that. I know the times that I've been less stressful going to trial are the times when I'm thoroughly prepared.
Absolutely.
I got everything. You know, I can make the argument and let the chips fall where they may, and know that I've done the best job I can.
Absolutely.
The times when I've been most stressed out is when I've had doubts about that.
Right. Whether I should have done something, or at the last minute you recognize, oh, crap, I really should have done the guy to do this one thing. And then you're all, oh, man, what do I do? And you just, again, you try to compensate for it at some level. You try to shore up those holes and again, put things together.
Yeah. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time, because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby. And allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top-line revenue to bottom-line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I have been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com. One of the things I discovered when I transitioned from family law to estate planning is that the paradigm for getting new clients changed. Family law, something happened in their life that they needed an attorney to represent them. In estate planning, oftentimes your job is to convince a potential client that they actually need your services.
Yeah, that would be different. Yeah.
You know, so it's a completely different paradigm shift. You know, I think there are different issues when we talk about criminal work. Most times we're talking about clients who've had something bad happen to them.
Right.
And they need an attorney.
Right.
On the flip side of that, going back to our earlier conversation, how do you market for that? How do you get your name out and make it, you know, top of mind, so when the people get in that position, they know who to call? And how do you do that tastefully? I know you said you do a few DUI cases. I've seen my fair share. Yeah. You know, you don't want to promote bad behavior, but at the same time, you want to let people know that you're there to help them if they have a challenge in that area. So how do you strike that balance? How do you do that tastefully?
Well, have you ever been at the an air show and you see those planes that ride in the air that's how I do it. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. It's I think the paradigm is similar to your family law paradigm. There's a trigger event. And people will initially ask the people around them that they trust if there is anybody that they know. So obviously having a pool of previous clients that you've done a good job for is a really good basis. But then the second level of that is, I always think about how I would look for a plumber. You know, where do I go to if I don't know a plumber, you know, that's from a friend, et cetera? You basically go online and you begin to do a diligent search. And unlike a plumber, you look for these criminal defense guys. You're looking for reviews. You're looking for people who've been around for a while. So the marketing is basically an online paradigm. You're looking on Google, you're looking on Bing, you're looking on Yelp. And there's some of these other online sources like lawyers.com, et cetera. Right. So we basically, as an attorney and running your own practice, you really quickly learn how to utilize the new marketing paradigm that's out there,
it used to be you put a big gigantic ad in the Yellow Pages
and that was it. And you were locked in for a year and that was it. Yeah. That's all you did.
But those times have changed, obviously.
Yeah. They've changed.
Yeah. I used to think that, you know, enough adult watering holes that I visit, that if I left my business card at them and I did DUI work, I'd probably have a steady source of business from that.
There's not a bad idea. I would say there was a point where I was doing a lot of stuff. I would be hanging out one place. I would join a club somewhere else. I would be and no matter where you go, if you get known in an community, you are the go-to guy. So it is a big deal. However, those are a little bit hit and miss. Again, the online marketing is really this net that you can cast and be on top of. And again, like just this interview is part of that online marketing aspect. I mean, you got to get your name out there. You have to, you know, let people get to know who you are via your online marketing. That's difficult to accomplish. And that's why sometimes these avenues really are helpful.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, again, we were talking about stress and the differences between the practice area and others. My sense is, maybe I'm wrong about it, but my sense is that the office environment is also a little different than, say, you know, your estate planning legal office. There's a different dynamic. There's a different energy involved. And as a result, I think it puts different stresses on being able to maintain staff.
Well, it is a pressure cooker here a lot of time, but I don't think, and I'm not sure, I haven't spent a lot of time in offices outside of this field, but I don't think it really is fundamentally different.
Okay.
In the sense, you start from the top. I'm the tip of the spear. And I basically set in motion things that need to be accomplished. I need the subpoena sent out. I need this conversation to happen with the DA in 2 weeks. And I need the client interviewed. And I need to then also speak with the private investigator. And I set the balls rolling. And then the staff has to take those up and accomplish those in a timely and efficient manner. And I'm assuming that almost all businesses are run the same way. You've got the guy at the top. He's saying, look, we need to, you know, we need to get the machines working more efficiently. So we need transistors or, you know, term or whatever, but, you know, put into them and we need an update on this software. And so let's get that rolling. And then it just kind of, and then the ball starts rolling in the direction. And you hope that the staff underneath you accomplishes what your end goal is.
So tell me what kind of systems then you use. What kind of things do you have in place to implement that that approach?
There, it's basically an online, almost like a community hub, wherein I've got, after court, I create a document for each of the hearings that I've had. And in that document, I be as specific as possible. This is what happened in court, and this is what needs to happen by next court. And I set that into place, and then I hand that to one of my staff, and they go down, they look at what those tasks are. My office manager then delegates those responsibilities out via Outlook, you know, tasks, you know, and they look at that and they say, you've got 10 days to accomplish this. And you've got, and then she delegates the other ones to another one of the staff members. You've got 20 days to accomplish this. And then ultimately, they're all delegated out and I keep my eye on as much as I can. But a lot of the time, it's just optimistic that it's going to get done. And by the time the next hearing rolls around, you know, I look at things as the hearing approaches and I say, has it been done? And 95% of the time it has.
Yep.
Sometimes things, you know, slip through.
So basically you're using Outlook as your project or your management tool.
Right.
Your office management tool. You're using a lot of email. What do you use for staff communication? Just
A lot of it's just verbal. And then we use, I just created a PDF, which is what we call our events log. Uh-huh. And the PDF is like, every time we do something on a file, you have to update that events log. Okay. So anytime you want, I could go look at that events log and I could see, oh, the client called in, this is what happened, or this task was accomplished, et cetera. So, and that's all in the cloud, meaning that we can all access it independently of each other, offsite, onsite. We can all have access each of the client's files and their individual events log. So I'm going to tell you the truth. It's a little hodgepodge because it's all basically my creation instead of some of these programs out there that might be a little bit more coherent. But each one of them is deficient in some level that I just didn't like. So I never invested in getting on board some of those. I just kind of, the ones that I've got work.
Yeah, it's understandable. I mean, what works works, and you keep it working the way it does. There's no sense in changing it for change's sake, for sure.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, you can fix it.
My impression of the criminal defense attorney is, you know, comes to court and he's got his file together. The better ones have a really organized file. The ones that have maybe something to work on show up with just a folder with loose papers and are always asking court's indulgence to be able to find what they're looking for.
Right.
How do you manage that system?
Well, we scan everything in and it is all digital. So I do have my computer, basically the Surface Pro, everything's digital. I like to go through, for example, the discovery and it's all bookmarked so that I have easy access to it. But you're right. A lot of this stuff comes down to organization and ability to access information when it's requested. And so you got to be familiar with what's going on. And you've also have to have your file pretty well organized. And again, it's our system, but it's all scanned in under here's the police reports, here's the toxicology report, here's the witness statements, and they're all in a folder. And I could quickly access them from my computer wherever I am at any point.
Tell me a little bit about technology in the courtroom and how that's changed in the 23 years that you've been practicing. My recollection when I was first doing courtroom work was that you had an overhead projector.
Right. You know, that was it.
And you were lucky if you had a screen to project on. Oftentimes it was the wall of the courtroom. Now, you know, things have changed a lot. Are you using any of the more advanced trial presentation tools in the courtroom?
For sure. I like you said, I used to have to bring my own projector and my own screen to court if I wanted to show any type of media. And they, so that was back in the days. I had to figure out, what are the lumens? Is the jury going to be able to see this video? And I, you know, I got all into it for a little while. Nowadays, what they do is they have high definition TVs in most of the courtrooms. It's always a difficult process. I go in there and my computer, it's like, oh shoot, it's old, it's an old VGA hookup, or now it's an HDMI, or now it's a digital display. So you have to be ready for their technology. So you have to kind of get familiar with them, whichever courtroom you're in and which jurisdiction you're in, they're all different. So you go in there with a number of adapters and things like that. And then you can put it up on the screen, et cetera. You know, if you want to show some type of media, which is a piece of evidence. So for example, we had a restraining order today where I needed to show some video. And so I hooked up the computer and then it was great. They had an HDMI hookup that went to all three screens, which were in the courtroom. So if at any point we needed to play the video, boom, I just hit it and they could see the video. So it really was awesome.
And yeah, I think it's really important now. I remember good friend of mine, she was across the aisle from me in a family law case, and I remember she had this beautiful spreadsheet presentation that she presented to the court, to the judge, and when he turned to me and said, "Mr. Tyra, where's your spreadsheet?" And I went, "Well, I was planning on using the flip chart over here, Your Honor." And you know, and I realized at that point, what am I doing? I'm a techie. I mean, I should be blowing the socks off of everybody in the courtroom.
Let me show you a hologram of the events.
Now I think the playing field has been leveled a little bit, because now those features are available, as you said, in most courtrooms. But it's still the well-prepared attorney who knows how to take advantage of those. You just can't throw up any kind of media and hope to be persuasive. No. You need to know how to use that electronic data.
Right. I will tell you that back in the day, I would do the PowerPoint presentation, for example, my closing, and I would almost use it like a teleprompter, you know, but nowadays I think it's important to put up some media, something for the jury to be also looking at. A lot of people are visual learners. They're not auditory learners and stuff. So you got to give them something visual to look at so that they can kind of connect with it, et cetera. So you gotta, if you're gonna use the technology, you can't just use it for some type of petty reason or a self-serving reason. You really need to make it so that it's making your presentation more persuasive for whatever reason. You're making someone listen to you more. You're clarifying somewhat of an abstract idea utilizing the technology that you have available.
And let's face it, the jury has grown up watching NCIS and
they're expecting it,
CSI, they're expecting it. So you need to be able to pull that off. Well, Absolutely. Let's wrap up here and talk about in all the years that you've been practicing. Sure, there were a couple of things maybe you wish you'd done differently, some lessons that you might have learned. Does anything come to mind that you think would be relevant to share with our audience today?
I think something that people don't learn real early on, and I think we even touched on it beforehand, you can be a good attorney and be a bad businessman or a bad business person.
Yep.
And sometimes it might not be a bad idea to have a partner who is capable of running the business side of things while you are the person who is the product. You are the person who accomplishes the legal stuff, the good legal analysis. It's because it's very difficult for me. For example, I've been in court all morning. And then I come run back, and then I've got to do marketing, and then I've got to do my taxes, and then I've got to prepare for tomorrow. You know, it's a lot better, I think, if you have a team where everybody takes their piece of the pie and they're really good at it. And
I think it's important to know what role you serve best.
Right.
If you are the kind of person that you can best serve your practice by being in the courtroom and leading the legal efforts,
right. Then
you need somebody. You need people to do all the other things.
Exactly right.
If you're the guy or gal who's the rainmaker, you can bring the business in, but you don't want to have to go to court. You don't want to have to deal with discovery deadlines and the like. Then you need to bring some people in.
Yeah, you nailed it.
And if you're the person who's the marketer and the operations manager and you run a taut ship and you can be the captain of this team, well, be the captain, you got to bring in some players.
Right. You're right.
I think that's a lesson that we oftentimes, as you said, learn a bit too late. And, you know, some of us struggled to learn it at all.
I know I did.
I was firmly of the belief that I wanted to be in the court, but I also wanted to be the techie guy. And I also wanted to manage the money. And
yes.
You know, so I was hard-headed. I didn't learn that lesson until the late.
Similar. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Listen, Kirk, it's been great chatting with you. I wish you the best.
Thank you, Neil. Tell our audience,
what's the best way to reach out to you if they want to chat about something you talked about or just visiting Rancho Cucamonga?
Yeah, I think if you just, and again, it's all Southern California is where we practice, but my webpage, thetarmanlaw.com, you know, you look that up and you can get all the information and email me. And I'm out there for anybody who has gotten any questions.
All right. Well, we'll have all that in the show notes for our listeners. And I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. You made it very easy. Appreciate it, man.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.